is the Mint Mobile Sports Show.
Yes, that's right. This is the Minmo Sports Show on Min, Missouri, ESPN 107.3. Happy Monday to you. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. This is the Minmo Sports Show. Thanks for tuning in. If you want to be a part of the conversation, you can call us 573-364-1045. That's 573-364-1045. You got something on your mind. John Francis joining me in studio. How are you, buddy?
Great. Thank you.
You are hot off the bike path. You went down the road a little ways to ride your bike, John.
Well, actually, Justin, you didn't hear the whole story.
Tell it to me.
So we went to South Carolina
to
ride. This is a bike ride that my wife and I have done every year for the last 6 years.
Do you always go to the same place?
They call them a Grand Fondo. It's put on by a former professional cyclist, and it's just a great ride. It's riding in the mountains, which we don't get to do here, you know.
Is it technically a race?
No.
No, okay.
Just a ride. But there's, you know, you're riding with 2,000 of your best friends.
Right.
So it was typically it's a lot of fun. This year we got there and we had a couple of things happen. I've had some issues with a knee this summer. And then my wife's back just went totally bananas Friday night before
the
ride.
While on the bike? Oh, before. Okay.
Yeah, I think from all the sitting, you know.
Right.
And then we woke up Saturday morning for the ride and it was cold and rainy.
Man.
So we said.
So did you go?
No, we said we're just gonna turn around and go back home.
you should have at least stayed the night or something.
Well, we stayed Friday night there, and we did get to eat at our favorite restaurant.
Well, that's good. That's a long drive to eat at a good restaurant, though, John. How long of a drive is that to where you were going, man?
Well, it's like 12 hours.
May I ask what you ate?
It was the Three Pigs Barbecue.
Okay.
It was good food. Matt would have liked it.
I'm just saying, Matt Glenn is like 10 minutes away in St. James.
Right. Yeah.
He would have prepared you a gourmet barbecue.
Yeah, which
meal.
I've had some of today. So,
man,
but
oh,
you
man.
Know, on the same token, though, we love getting out of town, and it's a nice trip. And we were there right when the fall colors were great in the east. So,
well, that's awesome.
We had a good time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, John, I don't know what to say, man. Whether I should say I'm sorry or congratulate you, but you got out of town.
We got out of town.
Nothing wrong with that.
That was fun.
That's awesome. You know. It was an interesting weekend in the world of sports. If I talked college football, I'd have lots of interesting things to talk about, but I don't, so sorry, you're out of luck there. And then there's that whole baseball thing that's going on where we know who's going to be in the World Series right now, as neither of the teams that I wanted to get to the World Series that were left accomplished that. And so instead, we're stuck with Boston and the Dodgers. And I have to tell you, when the playoffs started, with the exception of possibly the Yankees, there is no team, and the Cubs, obviously, in the National League. That goes without saying, doesn't it, Cardinals fans? There's no teams I wanted to see less in the World Series than those two. So to be stuck with both of them here, it really irks me when I see St. Louis columnists like Bernie Miklas write long articles about what a tremendous World Series this is going to be. Because for whatever reason, even though on paper this is a tremendous matchup and could be a fun series, I hate the Red Sox. I have hated the Red Sox especially passionately since they beat the Cardinals down those many moons ago. And the Dodgers are the Dodgers. Like, when was the last time you fell in love with a team that outspent everyone to get where they are? We don't respect that in the Midwest. It's a Midwest thing, right? Because we're blue collar, we're hardworking. Well, some of us are. Then there's John Francis, who's living off the fat of the land right now.
I don't know about that.
I'm just playing. John, salt of the earth. But no, seriously. I really do think that's a Midwest mentality where we look at, for instance, when the Yankees were doing it in the mid to late 90s. I didn't know anyone that wasn't already a Yankees fan that felt anything other than vitriol for the Yankees in that moment, right? No one respected them outspending the competition. And so, of course, the Dodgers come in, they bring in Magic Johnson, and then all of a sudden the money starts flowing. I have no idea why those two things are connected, but that's what happened. They just started shelling out dough. And now, to their credit, they've also made a number of tremendous acquisitions with young talent, and that young talent has blossomed with the high-paid talent, and now they are where they are. But it's Los Angeles. So on top of the fact that they were big spenders that tried to buy their way into this situation, it's Los Angeles. And if there's one thing that I am consistent on, it is that I do not root for teams from Los Angeles or New York. Under any circumstances, for any reason, I don't do that. I don't know what kind of a person that makes me. I think it makes me the best kind of person. Feel free to disagree with that. But are any of you out there with me on this right now? Like, if this had been a Milwaukee-Houston World Series, I think it would have been just as interesting as far as the matchups go, the personalities on the field, and I wouldn't have hated the two cities, which is weird to say because these are two teams we used to do battle with in the National League Central. But we don't anymore, and I've let bygones be bygones, but Boston is still Boston, and Los Angeles is still Los Angeles. They got to be two of the worst cities in America if you're a Midwest person, right? Why are you so shocked by this? We talked about Boston last week, didn't we?
Exactly. And Dan Israel is not a big Boston fan, that's for sure.
We'll ask him that question. He's going to get our back on this.
Right.
Have you ever been to Boston?
No.
You're a traveling man.
Never.
They just seem like really unpleasant people.
Have you been there?
No.
Okay.
No, I said on the show last week, my barber's from Boston. He's the only nice person I've ever known from Boston. And he's kind of cranky. It's just an entertaining cranky.
Yeah.
And he's not in Boston anymore. So I just have to imagine if you go up to Boston, it's just a bunch of people that are constantly unhappy about everything going on in the world and in their life.
Probably so.
I'm sorry if that's patently false, but this is the bubble that I live in. So, and then you have Los Angeles, which is the complete opposite of that, at least on the surface, right? In L.A., everybody is just magically beautiful and perfect and everything is great, even though life is so expensive and you know, secretly they have 17 different spouses and, you know, their life is horrible, but they hide underneath their money and the glitz and the glamour. Now, these are huge overgeneralizations, I realize this. But, I mean, surely there are many people listening to me right now. They're like, preach, Renaud, preach!
Well, I just read an interesting news story.
Bring it, man.
On Los Angeles, as a matter of fact.
I'm ready.
About people who are turning, they take a regular apartment house and they turn it into, they have a small kitchen and a small living area and a small bathroom, and then the rest is like bunk beds. And then they charge like $1,200 a bed.
Are you serious?
Right. So they'll have like 12 people in an apartment.
So it's this crazy communal living.
Exactly.
That, $1,200 for a bed.
Yeah.
And a shared kitchen with 12 people.
Right.
I can't imagine that world either.
No.
I mean, I'm very thankful for the bang for my buck that I get in life living where I do.
No kidding.
And it wouldn't have to be Rolla, although I very much enjoy living in Rolla. But I like a little bit slower pace of life where people are friendly but not syrupy friendly like down south. You know, like, I just feel like we have found the sweet spot here in Missouri. Now, there would be limits to how I feel. There are certain towns that I would not like living in. Having lived in a tiny town near Hannibal, Missouri, that was one of the most racist, offensive communities I've ever lived in my life. But I'm just saying, I think Rolla, we found a nice little sweet spot where I can absolutely sit back and despise cities like Boston, Los Angeles, and enjoy it. Is there anyone out there that's listening that thinks I'm crazy or you totally agree with me? 573-364-1045. That's 364-1045. I realize that I have just offended massive populations of people. Although I have to say, I doubt listenership is huge in Boston or L.A. I think that's probably a fair statement.
Probably, although you never know online.
You can certainly catch the show.
You certainly can.
Through iTunes or Blog Talk Radio or iHeart Radio or any other millions of different ways.
Or Google Home or Alexa.
Yeah, all of it. Our show is everywhere. But, all right. So, listen, let's take a quick commercial break. I said all of that to say I'm not going to spend any time on the World Series. You got your World Series talk. I hope you enjoyed it. You're not going to hear any tales of Cody Bellinger's greatness or David Price and Clayton Kershaw shaking their playoff demons. I don't care. I do not care. The only Los Angeles team you'll hear me talk about is the Rams, and that's only because I'm so pissed off still about what they did to me. They broke my heart. You broke my heart, Fredo. All right, quick commercial break. 3 minutes. Don't go anywhere. It's the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. We will be back. Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in. Remember, 4:30, as always, we'll have Dan Israel joining us with the Chiefs Radio Network to talk about that Chiefs win last night over the Cincinnati Bengals. It's good to see the defense deciding to show up and Patrick Mahomes back in the record books, but we will talk about that at 4:30. In the meantime, I want to start talking about a topic that is going to be an offshoot for other conversations during the show. Last week, it was reported that the NBA and the NBPA, which is the National Basketball Players Association, were having talks to try to end the one-and-done era, which is the era in which college athletes over the age of, or I can't remember, like under the age of 19 or under, post-high school, have to spend 1 year basically at a college. That is oversimplifying it, but that's the gist of it. Basically, when you graduate high school, you got to play 1 year of college or international ball before you can be drafted in the NBA. And I have made very clear on this show how much I hate that rule. I don't understand why, if a player has the talent and a team has the interest, that a player can't be drafted. I think it's ridiculous. And this idea of amateurism in college sports is a farce. I mean, I've gone on and on and on and on about that topic for years now on this show. And I think the one-and-done rule is completely ridiculous. And for me, the one-and-done rule hurts everybody. Okay, the only people that it really kind of protects are NBA teams, because it exposes them to a little bit less risk, because they get one more year at a higher level to see these high school-aged players prove themselves, to know if you're really getting what's advertised. But again, bust rate is still plenty high, even with players that are proven commodities, and I'm using air quotes there, in college. It is a very imperfect science drafting players, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, it doesn't matter. But the NBA, in particular, which basically only has two rounds, and you know it's a much smaller pool of talent to draft from, they really want to try to get as much information as they can before they make that choice. And that apparently is the sticking point right now between the NBA and the Players Association, which is that the commissioner is pressing the Players Association to require that player agents furnish all teams with medical information on draft prospects, because obviously knowledge is power, and the more you know, theoretically, the less risk that you're taking on with these players. The league also wants to require players' attendance and some level of participation in the pre-draft combine, because in years past, I saw in recent years of 65 participants, 11 abstained from submitting physicals or choosing to participate in the combine. Now, you would think that that always hurts the player, right? Because A, it raises potential red flags, and B, it says to the team that the player is not confident enough in his abilities to perform in these combines, and the combines are what we use to expand our evaluations and to feel more comfortable with taking an 18-year-old, 19-year-old player at such an early spot and paying them so much money. But apparently, according to what I've read, the agents who these players are hiring are the ones that are saying, absolutely not, no matter what, do not relinquish the right to hold back medical information. This is a card we want to hold close to our chest. And why would the agents want that, John? It's because they're all about making the money. They're all about making the money for their clients, which in turn makes the money for themselves. And the less information that can be out there that would spook a team and make a team not want to take a player, the more potential money they all stand to make.
So what are they holding back?
Exactly? They're holding back the medicals, right? Mm-hmm. The detailed medical information that talks about a player's injury history, what condition their body is in, and that matters. Now, I'm sure there have been plenty of times where the medical information is, it creates a sense of unnecessary fear or hesitation for a player, and it comes back to bite them because someone else takes a chance on that player a little bit later and they end up thriving, right? I'm sure that happens, but I would guess more times than not, it protects a team from what would have been a disastrous pick. And a player ends up falling to a place where they wouldn't have otherwise. So you've got this arm wrestling match going on right now between the NBA and the Players Association. Now, no changes that would be made would take effect until 2022, which is funny. Everyone's getting all excited about this, but the reality is nothing is going to change at least for another 4 years. But something that has changed is a very interesting plot twist. The G League, don't know where they came up with that name, but the G League is going to offer $125,000 to elite prospects to play in their league as an alternative to that 1 year in college. And I'm so fascinated by this because the G League is owned by the NBA. So you've got the NBA trying to negotiate with the Players Association to get rid of one and done. But they haven't reached an agreement. So in the meantime, the NBA is saying, hey, guess what? We're going to compete with the NCAA. And this is beautiful because you know how I feel about the NCAA and that absolute fraud of a human being, Mark Emmert, who is the president. Guy's a crook and a liar and a fraud. I love this because for so long your choice has been go to college and play ball and don't make any money and risk hurting yourself. Don't worry, Jonte Porter. I'll get to you in a minute. Or going overseas and exposing yourself to a higher level of professional basketball and getting paid what you can get paid. But where's the problem with the traveling overseas? Well, there's probably a few. Number one being, how anxious would you be to encourage your 18-year-old child to go travel to Italy and play basketball for a year? I wouldn't be too anxious. But even more than that, you're out of the eye of the American public when you do that. When you leave and you go overseas, even for that year, to get paid, you don't get noticed as much. Now, it remains to be seen if the G League is a solution to the getting noticed part of the problem. But it does fix the money part of the problem. And if the G League is run by the NBA, it stands to reason that NBA front offices would be more likely to notice you in a situation like that because they're already monitoring what happens in the G League. And $125,000 is not nothing. In fact, John and I talked about last week the fact that the NCAA trial with Adidas and all of that is going on right now, and I haven't heard a single payday mentioned, which doesn't mean there hasn't been, but I've tried to follow it a little bit, that exceeded $125,000. That is a huge sum of money. And what's interesting is, if you're an elite prospect, that $125,000, I mean, it does some things for you and your family. I'd love to make $125,000 in a year. I currently don't, although I'm negotiating with the radio station as we speak on that because my station manager is sitting here. No, but seriously, think about what that would mean to a poor 18-year-old who has all the skills in the world but is afraid of risking his body in a year of amateurism. $125,000 is not nothing. That's a nice little insurance policy to get your career started. And these kids know that they're not guaranteed anything. The percentage of LeBron James can't miss type players is very, very low. But this would hit a number of guys that would be in that tier below where they're highly thought of. They would potentially be drafted as a high schooler, but can get paid. So I'm really fascinated to see how this would play out. And on top of all of that, they would benefit from the NBA infrastructure, which has off-court development programs. The league president said, this was his wording, he said those programs are geared towards facilitating and accelerating their transition to the pro game. So in theory, you're getting out from under the system, the college system, and whatever system that coach runs, where you're at their mercy, and you're in a system that is specifically designed to get you ready to be a professional basketball player. Because that's not what college programs are doing. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but college programs are trying to win, right? They're playing to win, man. John Calipari can boast all he wants about the amount of Kentucky Wildcats that have gone on to success in the NBA. But his first priority isn't to set you up for success in the NBA. His first priority is to win college basketball games. And I am sure that there are plenty of times where that is at the behest of a player's development. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not even dissing John Calipari or any of the other college basketball coaches for that. I totally get it. Because they're in the business of trying to be successful at their level. Because they want to maximize their own personal paydays, and they want to build a great legacy. But what have we seen in professional sports, John? We have seen players holding out into the season now. We have seen players become vocally anti a team while still playing for that team, desperate to leave. There is angst. There is mistrust. There is fear that is ruling the minds of these young people, and in some cases, these older people that are professional athletes. Because everybody is out for number one. And I'm telling you, that mindset is going to continue to become more pervasive in sport, and it is going to become a bigger and bigger problem. Right now in the NFL, all you hear about are how important it is to get good talents on rookie contracts. What happens when those rookie contract players start holding out and they want more money? Then you've got an even bigger problem. We're going to talk about this some more later in the show. This is the Minmo Sports Show on Mid Missouri ESPN 107.3. Quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll have Dan Israel with the Chiefs Radio Network. You don't want to miss it. Stick with us. Welcome back to the Minmo Sports Show on Mid Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in on this gorgeous Monday in Rolla, Missouri. Joining us with the Chiefs Radio Network, as he does every Monday at 4:30, is Dan Israel. How are you, my friend?
Victory Monday, man. Victory. You know I love it.
We've had so many of these lately. It's been delightful.
Hey, you know what? You got to take these because there are a lot of years we didn't get them.
And, you know, I want to start off with you talking about something that I don't do a whole lot. I don't talk about Coach Reed with you very often, which is not to say that there's any reason for that. But most of the times when I'm talking to you, it's about the players. But I know you know Coach Reed so well, and coming off his 200th win. Is that correct?
Yeah.
It was a pretty significant day for him.
This guy's special. He's just such a unique guy. He's a super intelligent coach. He's a down-to-earth human being, very transparent individual, and a incredibly hardworking guy. It's very rare to be around those type A personalities where they don't crush you. You know, John Gruden's a good example of that. There's several members of the Chiefs that worked for John Gruden down in Tampa Bay, and you know, he would get there at 3 a.m. and he would leave at 10:00, and everybody that was around him got ground down due to just the abrasiveness of the way he worked. It wasn't that they didn't appreciate it, wasn't that they weren't willing to do it, sure. But it's just part of the grind of being caught between two rough surfaces. And Andy Reid has some special talent there where he can work so incredibly hard and surround himself with people but you don't feel that same demand. You're always feeling appreciated, and the work just always feels like it's a contributing factor. He is a he's just a unique guy, man. The more I get to know him, the more I'm around him, the more I appreciate what an incredible coach he is. Not only that, but this guy also is business savvy. I mean, Mitch Holthus talks about it all the time. He is the CEO of basically a $2 billion company and churning out, you know, $150 million in profit a year or whatever NFL franchises do. And make no mistake, man, you can be really good at the business part of this, but it is a heck of a lot easier when they're winning, and it's almost impossible when you're not. So when a guy strung together 6-1 record in the first 7 weeks of the season, everybody on the business side is in love with that.
You got that right. You know, talking about the things that Coach Reed does, I read something that was interesting to me yesterday that spoke to why I think it's possible that this defense was able to achieve the measure of success that they did outside of just a good game plan, which was the Chiefs had four scoring drives that went at least 5 minutes. And, you know, one of the things this team has done so well this season is score quickly, but I think it's put a tremendous strain on this defense. And that offensive game plan yesterday was able to extend some drives, keep the defense off the field and give them extra rest and really wear down the competition. Was that something you guys noticed during the game yesterday?
It absolutely was. You know, they had 353 yards passing, 198 rushing, 33 first downs.
Wow.
33. Wow. Now, they beat the Cincinnati Bengals in time of possession, but not by a lot, believe it or not. It was only like 33-27 or something, like 33-27. That usually is more lopsided when you see a game that felt and was as lopsided as that game was yesterday. But you're exactly right. They just managed the clock all day long. One of the absurdities about last night's game that I don't think I'll ever understand was Cincinnati is behind by 15 touchdowns, it felt like. In the third quarter, they're running the freaking ball with Joe Mixon. Now, look, I know Mixon's a good guy, but they've got A.J. Green on their team. How is it you're running the football behind by 3 or 4 touchdowns? I don't think I'll ever understand that, but from the Chiefs side of the ball, that's exactly what they did, was run the football, keep that clock moving, and boy, man, Kareem Hunt, oh my goodness.
He ran with such purpose yesterday.
It was Justin, man, inspiring. I didn't think it was going to get any tougher, but wow.
That hurdle, though, I mean, I know it's all over the national news today. What a spectacular play.
When he came down from that hurdle and his feet hit the ground, coaches will always tell you never leave your feet because you're powerless when you leave your feet.
Right.
He came down and had force going forward to, like, go back into that kind of downhill running bruising style.
He drove three guys another 10 yards. I mean, awesome. And that was in a play where when you were watching it live, you thought he had been tackled basically behind the line of scrimmage. He got lost in that pile and emerged. And next thing you know, he's doing the hurdles. So I'll tell you what, Kareem Hunt, second half of the season last year, we talked about it a lot. And I even thought maybe the first couple of games this season, pretty quiet, and I think a lot of what we saw last year was probably just attributed to fatigue, you know, from his first full NFL season. But my goodness, it is so encouraging to see him running the way that he did last night, because I'm stealing this from someone that I saw on Twitter, but I think it's completely true. You could make a legitimate argument right now that the Chiefs have the best quarterback, tight end, wide receiver, and running back in the entire NFL right now.
How about that? I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right. And look, Gurley deserves, you know, all the recognition that he's getting, right?
Absolutely.
But the way Kareem Hunt is running, and you know, I've heard from inside sources, as you guys know, my son works for the Rams.
Yes,
and
he does.
He said before that Gurley talks about Hunt all the time.
Is that right?
He said last year, you know, I said, well, you guys didn't play Gurley. We played Hunt. He goes, you know, Gurley talks about, people tell him that all the time. He says, you know, just because I'd have been in the game doesn't mean Kareem Hunt still wouldn't have been the rushing leader.
Yeah.
Doesn't
yeah.
mean Kareem Hunt wouldn't have outrushed me. This is a good running back. He's incredibly good. And so for Todd Gurley to say that, because whether you want to say Kareem Hunt is the best in the league or not, if you're not going to make that argument, then you're going to say Gurley is.
Absolutely.
Because it's
right.
those two guys. But I just, you know, I don't know what else to think about this kid with, I mean, it's just remarkable, man. And watching him churn these yards out, and I don't want to jinx him with this at all, but one of the best things that John Dorsey told me about this kid, he goes, you're going to love this kid. He's football. He's a football player, you know? And one of the things he said about him is he fumbled one time in college, one time in his entire college career. So what does he do? First play out of the gate last year, he fumbles. And everybody turns and looks at each other. It's like, well, there goes that. I mean, come on. I thought he was supposed to be sure-handed. Justin, he hasn't fumbled since.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that's something, as much as you want to say about how hard Jamal Charles ran and how shifty he could be, how many yards per carry he could get, that was never something we could say about him. That ball was always – even Marcus Allen fumbled the ball. So,
well, while we're drooling over absolutely insane young talent that the Chiefs have, we've got to shift gears and talk about Mahomes, who, I mean, continues to set new records. You know, now with the record for 22 touchdowns over an 8-game period, what else is there left to say about this kid that we haven't said yeah. already?
Man, he's taken records from Peyton Manning and from Drew Brees, and now from
Kurt Warner last night.
Kurt Warner, yeah. I'm like, wow, holy cow! I mean, and it's not going to be long before he's taken all the franchise records from Lynn Dawson on some of that stuff. Well, you see, I mean, Lenny's got so many, but it was interesting. We had Rod Woodson on the air yesterday, and Rod's a really intelligent guy. And when he walked in the booth off the air, he was, you know, we were talking to him a little bit about Mahomes, and he was like, yeah, and I know he's impressive, but you know, let's give him some time. Let's see what he looks like. Let's give him some time. You know,
it's
early. And you know what? And that's fair. And a guy played as long, I mean, he's a Hall of Fame defensive back.
Sure. Sure.
You have to listen to that advice. After the game, his opinion was a little different. Seeing him in real life, in real time, a little more impressive than it was looking him back on the All 22. It's the same we said about Tyreek Hill, man. You cannot see it on tape.
Nope. There's no explanation for a guy like Tyreek Hill with his size to make the big catches across the middle of the field, but then still outrun everybody. I've never seen a player like Tyreek Hill.
No, I haven't either. And you know, one more thing, not to jump back on Mahomes, but one more thing, we always talked about, okay, well, if this guy's going to be a Brett Favre type, man, he's going to lose you some games. You know, the one thing you didn't count on, Brett Favre would do the gunslinging and all that stuff.
Right.
Brett Favre wasn't throwing 4 TDs a game.
No, that's true. Absolutely.
If you're going to hold a 4-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio, I'll give you that.
I'll live with that one interception all day.
You betcha. Go right ahead. That'll blow Dick Vermeil's statistics right out of the water. When you turn the ball over, you lose 90% of the time.
Pretty special, I think, what the defense was able to accomplish, because you and I talked about this last week. Coming into this game, even though they lost in heartbreaking fashion to the Steelers, this is a Bengals team that is overachieved. They've played well this year, and their offense in particular has really been clicking. Andy Dalton had a nice season up to this point. Boy, for them to shut them down on the big stage like they did last night, I thought was a bit of a statement, because, I mean, everyone that I had heard talking about this game leading up to it expected it to be a shootout.
Yeah, you know, I kind of wanted to say something on the air, but since I knew Andy Dalton from TCU, I didn't. But he's not the same quarterback in Cincinnati or on the road as he is in Cincinnati, but yeah. He's still so capable, and they've played so well. I mean, they've played well all season this year, and he's got AJ Green, who right now, in my opinion, is playing like Calvin Johnson did a few years ago.
Yep.
I mean, he's just, he's an impressive guy. Boy, they shut him down hard yesterday. He still got over 100 yards, you know?
That's when you know a receiver's special. When it feels like you didn't hear from them, they still put up 100.
Exactly.
That's incredible.
That's exactly right. The only guys that even realized he was doing that well was guys that started him on their fantasy
exactly
team.
Exactly right.
So, man, I, you know, from a Chiefs defense standpoint, they had a plan and they went after this guy. And I'll tell you, there's guys back there that are on page 10 of a 100-page playbook here. I mean, they're just into our system, barely. Right. Jordan Lucas, Ron Parker's back. We used to have a safety named Eric Berry. He was a guy. He was a really good player.
I think I heard of him once.
I don't even know what to think about Houston and Berry not playing in a game, and they hold them to 10 points.
It's pretty awesome, man.
It's pretty unbelievable. And even if you say, okay, well, maybe we're giving too much credit to the Cincinnati Bengals. Well, we'll see,
yeah,
right?
I mean, sure,
we'll see
sure.
where they end up. A lot of times that can start a power slide on a team. When you
yep.
when you spank them like that, they can start to doubt themselves. But we'll see where they end up. But I'd like to see – this is two games in Arrowhead that they have shut down two very good offenses in the Jacksonville Jaguars. Isn't it remarkable? We played just our third game in Arrowhead yesterday.
That's crazy.
I know. We were like, hey, it feels like we've never been here before, but they've shut down the Jacksonville Jaguars, I thought, especially early in the game. And what they did last night, I mean, they put in the backup quarterback and just conceded.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The Bengals just said, screw it. This is, you know, we're not going to make
risk.
This one.
Yep. Yep.
I think that's a pretty impressive and holding them to 10 points. They held Joe Mixon, who's been running out of the stadium, held him to 23 yards in the first half. How about that?
That's unbelievable. And by the way, I had Joe Mixon on my fantasy team. So,
dude, well, it would have been good up till last night.
So I want to talk a little bit about Dustin Colquitt, who didn't have to kick a ball last night.
I went into Andy's office last night before I go, hey, coach, congratulations. Listen, Dustin wanted me to ask if he could get next week off too.
I bet he would love to be the holder and only the holder every single week.
You betcha. You betcha.
You know, when you get paid a couple million dollars to do a job and you basically don't have to and you're not injured, you know, you're still there. You're available if they need you. That's not too bad.
It's pretty funny because Dustin's really kind of become the elder statesman. I mean, he's one of the older guys in the locker room, and
yeah.
he really fits that role. He is a clown and a half. There are so many stories I could tell you, but none of them are airworthy. But he's just one of those guys. He's a good, down-to-earth guy. He's great for the city, great for our kingdom, and I love having him there. And the fact that we don't use him is almost a shame.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when the Raiders used to use Sebastian Janikowski would win game after game after game for him. We've got the league's best punter, and we barely use him.
That's the best kind of problem to have, Dan.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. So we survived. We did so much more than survive. We thrived during the seven-game gauntlet. We thought it was going to be a six-game gauntlet. I'm going to call it the seven-game gauntlet. And now we've got Denver coming to town this coming Sunday. Any thoughts on that game? Are you worried about a little bit of a letdown after that great performance this week?
You know, 29 years of this and so many, Lynn Elliott missing three kicks and home field advantage and losing in the first round. I mean, I'm just so jaded. Yes, I can't help it. I'm with you. We got through the worst part of the schedule. If you'd said a month ago, we're going to be 6-1 here, what do you say? I'd say I'm buying my tickets to the Super Bowl. What else?
I'm ready, baby.
But when I sit here right now, I think, you know, Denver's kind of still in it. Thankfully, John Gruden seems to be figuring out a way to self-destruct. I don't know what's going on there, man.
That Amari Cooper for a first-round pick.
I don't understand it. He's like single-handedly dismantling that team. I'll tell you something else I thought was weird. Reggie McKenzie was in our hotel last week in New England.
Really?
Yeah. I thought that was odd. So the Raiders are in England playing the international game.
Right.
And their general manager was in our hotel. Now his kid plays for us, but still, I've never known a general manager to not be with his team. That I'm telling you, the wheels have come off that team, and that they look, $100 million contract. I guarantee John Gruden's going to win all the arguments.
Absolutely.
I don't know how long that'll last, but it's good for a couple of years for sure. But he is obviously sweeping out the old and trying to put his own thumbprint on this. But we'll see what happens because it sure seemed like they had put together a lot of talent on that team, and he's just single-handedly, you know, dealing the cards off the table.
Well, I know I shouldn't be doing this, but there's one date I'm watching, and it's November 19th, Monday night, when we play the Rams in Los Angeles. I am so, so excited about that game.
Yeah, it's a Super Bowl preview right there. Let me just tell you.
I hope you're right, brother. I hope you're right, man. Hey, Dan, I sure appreciate you as always. Hopefully we get another victory Monday next Monday to do some chatting.
We absolutely will.
All right, Dan, have a great week, man. Thanks, buddy.
You too.
That's Dan Israel with the Chiefs Radio Network. He joins us every Monday at 4:30 to talk Chiefs, and it has been wonderful recently. I hope that we can continue that trend and that the Chiefs can avoid a meltdown against the Broncos as the Broncos travel to Kansas City. That game's at noon, and you can, of course, catch that game on ESPN 107.3. We're going to take a quick commercial break. 3 minutes. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Dan Israel. Remember, you can catch him every week at 4:30 here on the Mid-Mo Sports Show. John Francis joining me in studio. And I got to tell you, a name popped up in my sports feed that I hadn't heard in a long time.
What's that?
Now, for you old school 90s NFL fans, you may remember the name Ray Carruth. Ray Carruth was a wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers. He was an okay wide receiver, but the reason that he became a news story was because in 1999, his pregnant girlfriend, Cherica Adams, was found murdered. And fast forward to the end of the story, Ray Carruth was found guilty of having hired a hitman to murder his pregnant, 8-month pregnant, I might add, girlfriend because supposedly he didn't want to pay child support. Now, there's a lot to take in right there. But at the end of the day, you have a dude that arranged the murder of a young woman who was carrying his son. At the time, I was would have been 17. I was so appalled by the whole thing because I just couldn't possibly fathom someone. Because Ray Carruth would have been young. I think he had only been in the NFL maybe 3 years or so. So we're talking about a guy who's early to mid 20s, right? To do something so horrible. Well, the reason that he's in the news now is because he just got released from prison. Now, I have a couple thoughts on this. I understand that in our country, overcrowding is a huge problem in our prisons and jails. But I tend to think that the way to fix the overcrowding issue isn't to pull people that hire murderers to take out hits on pregnant girlfriends.
Right.
Now, to be clear, the child did actually survive that the woman was carrying, but has cerebral palsy, which was that condition was connected to the mother's loss of blood and oxygen from the shooting. So the child was saved and is being raised by its grandma. The child's 18 years old. And Ray Carruth reached out to this young man to want to have a relationship with the child. Oh. I would love to know what that initial conversation was like. Hey, I'm your dad. What's up? You've not met me yet because, well, I shot your mom, killed her before you were born. But, hey, you're still here and I'm still here, so let's get to know each other. I don't have a lot to tell you because literally for your entire life, I've been in a prison, but tell me about your 18 years. I don't understand how sentencing works. I'm not an attorney, John, but how do you get out of jail after 18 years for hiring to have someone murdered?
I can't imagine. That should have been a life sentence.
I mean, are we really going to make a distinction between the murderer and the person who hired the murdering? Maybe there's a little bit less badness in one than the other, but I feel like we're kind of splitting hairs if you're out there putting out hits on people.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's at least that I've ever heard. Not that there would be a redeemable reason to hire a hitman, but I can think of a few scenarios where, like, someone did something to your horrible to your family, and you want to hunt them down and have them killed. Like, I could think of some scenarios where I, as the general public, would be like, yeah, that obviously still wasn't okay, but I get it, you know, but not this. Not wanting to pay child support. Like, if that doesn't speak to some level of insanity, I have no idea what does. And here's what was interesting. Well, the whole thing's interesting to me, but he gave a phone interview to WSOC-TV and said, I'm excited about just being out of here, which I'm sure you are. I'm nervous just about how I'll be received by the public. You don't say. I still have to work. I still have to live. I have to exist out there. And it just seems like there's so much hate and negativity towards me. I mean, is this guy that? Okay, so you have a guy who thinks he has a chance at a relationship with the son of the woman he murdered while she was pregnant with him. And he's bemoaning the negativity towards him. Can't imagine why people might feel that way. Now, without a doubt, no doubt about it, the guy is free. Like, he served his time that he was sentenced to, and he is out in the world now. And so I have said on the show time and time again, I'm all for reclamation projects, but man, this is a tough one, guys. This is a tough one. But he's out, and he's in the world today. So God bless America. This is the Minmo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. It's top of the hour. We've got a three-minute commercial break, but we got tons of great sports talk. You don't want to miss it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Minmo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. John, you remember a million years ago? It might have predated you. It might have been with Ian Ballew.
Okay.
I want to go back to the final countdown every 5 o'clock hour to start the 5 o'clock hour.
I'll work on that.
That should
be doable.
Such a good pump up song.
It's a great song.
And that.
That was not.
I don't know. You could just take Childish Gambino out of the rotation.
I'll do that.
Yeah, I needed a little pump up coming back in from this break, and you might have needed it too, because it is 5 o'clock and you are done with work. Congratulations, that's big news for you, and you chose to spend that time with us, the Midmo Sports Show here on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3, and I am thankful for that. I'm Justin Renaud. He's John Francis. You can catch the entirety of the show every week on Mondays from 4 to 6. But if you missed any of it and you want to get caught up, subscribe to the podcast. You can listen through iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, subscribe through iTunes. And Childish Gambino's still going. It just won't stop. It just won't stop. But listen, we've been a little bit all over the grid so far on tonight's show, and I'm going to continue to be all over the grid. But before we do that, we're going to take a call. Let's go to our phone lines and see what our caller has to say. Caller, you're on the Minmo Sports Show. What's on your mind tonight?
It is the most wonderful time of the year.
And why is that?
You've got Chiefs football. You've got the World Series. But most of all, wrestling season is right around the corner, starting October 29th.
It is definitely the most wonderful time of the year in your world, my friend.
And so I've got to toot wrestling's horn a little bit. Jaden Cox. If you recall, in the 2016 Olympics, got a bronze medal.
Sure, of course. Mizzou graduate.
Mizzou standout.
Yep. Uh-huh.
He, last year at the World Championships, got a bronze medal. And just today, beat Ivan Yankowski from Belarus 4-1 in the gold medal match and is now the world champion.
Wow, that's awesome. Nice. And he beat a guy named Ivan, which is bonus points.
Right, so in his bracket, he had to go through a guy from Georgia, Moldova, Iran, and then Belarus.
Moldova?
Yeah.
What are there, like 18 people in Moldova? That's incredible that they have someone competing at the highest level.
those East European and Middle Eastern countries, man, they are beasts when it comes to wrestling.
Well, that's awesome, man. We got a Mizzou grad that is a world champion. That's fantastic.
Absolutely. So,
and I'm assuming, because you're very involved in Rolla wrestling, that you're looking forward to the upcoming season there.
We've got a lot of kids coming out, and great things headed our way. So we're excited about our prospects, and but you know you can't cheat the grind. So it all starts on October 29th, and you got to put the work in and get on the mat and blood, sweat, and tears, baby. That's what wins matches.
You know, there's one other person right now who wholeheartedly agrees with you that it is the most wonderful time of the year, and that's Ray Carruth. Free as a bird, baby.
I'm sure he's breathing a little different air these days. So
got that right. Hey, thanks for the call, brother. Sure appreciate you, man.
All right, peace out.
Have a good one. See you, Jeremy. Ray Carruth. That is not a name I was expecting to hear. Absolutely not. But man, that's awesome. Jaden Cox, world champion. You know, you saw the ascension there, and it's pretty exciting to so many people have those opportunities, but in a sport like wrestling, you know, are just come up just short so many times and are never able to achieve that highest level of success. So good for him, man. That's absolutely fantastic. That kind of threw a – where do I want to go? All right, here's where we'll go. We'll go somewhere I was not planning on going right now. But this is absolute absurdity. This is not anything that you would have heard on any radio show that you listen to today. But I am a huge Food Network junkie. I love watching the Food Network.
Really?
Absolutely love it. I'm a sucker for all the cooking shows. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. If a cooking show is on, it will probably pull me in, unless there's a sporting event that's on that I care about more. I love them, John.
Wow.
I can watch Beat Bobby Flay every night.
Yeah.
I love that show. Bobby Flay is he's a pretty great TV personality. Seems like an interesting dude. Has a pretty good sense of humor and exposes himself to risk by being challenged by people that cook their best meal every week. Well, apparently Bobby Flay dabbles in the world of sports. And I'm using the world of sports a little loosely here to tell this story. But I'm on a short segment, and so I wanted to get this in. Apparently, he is an owner and a horse breeder. And is really wanting to pull a larger audience into the world of horse racing. Here's what he said recently on a podcast. I think horse racing is at a critical moment. Really? It needs more awareness, more people latching onto it, which should not be that much of a stretch. Really? The one thing I can tell you is when I introduce people to the sport in the right way, they really get hooked in the best way. And here, friends, is where Bobby absolutely loses his mind. Once they get a little sense of the fashion and excitement and all the things that go along with having a great day at the races, it's something they need. Okay, Bobby, when you start off any argument to a sports fan with once they get into the fashion, you are going to lose 95% of sports fans. I get what he's saying. Horse racing isn't about the event that's going on. It's not about the sport of horse racing. It's about the event that is going to a horse race. But the problem, John, is horse racing tracks don't have problem getting bettors to come out and watch the races and have fun. It's no one wants to watch it on TV because no one gives a flip. There's three races, and the only reason anyone watches the second or third race is if there's a horse that has a chance at a Triple Crown. That's the only reason. No one cares. No one is ever going to care. There is literally nothing that you can do in the 2018 millennial, I want entertainment now and all the time generation that is going to pull them in to watching horse racing. Nothing you can do. That ship has set sail, John. I don't know when horse racing's heyday was. I'm guessing it was like back in the 60s, around Secretariat's prime. But but nobody freaking cares now. We've had two Triple Crown winners in the last couple years, and no one's talking about horse racing. It hasn't generated any extra buzz or interest or excitement. So when he says horse racing is at a critical moment, yes, you're right, except it's been at the same critical moments for the last 50 years. Critical meaning it's dying. You're always going to have the absurdly affluent, wealthy, snobbish portion of society that wants to go because of the passion and because of the pomp and circumstance and the people and the money and the glitz and the glamour. But to an average Joe like me, blue-collar Justin, living in the Midwest, I don't care about horse racing.
I didn't know at first if you said affluent or effluent.
Affluent. What's effluent?
The other end of the horse.
Oh, interesting. What are your thoughts on this, John? You're easily the most affluent person I know. I'm gonna run with this theme for the whole show.
Gee, what's happening to your mic, Justin?
No, in all seriousness, does it strike?
The one good thing about horse racing is it's 3 minutes for the race.
That
is true. You're done.
Right.
So you don't have to sit through 4 hours of pregame show. Maybe you do.
You do.
I've never actually watched a horse race.
Kentucky Derby is like 3.5 hours of coverage. They give you the freaking history of each of the horses.
Wow.
I don't care about this horse liking long walks on the beach. Like, that doesn't matter to me. I don't care who its sire was. Like, I'm just a dude that wants to see some entertainment. Like, I don't even like an hour of football pregame buildup.
Right.
The day of Super Bowl talk that comes on the day of the Super Bowl with the game starting at 6 or 5, whenever, I don't watch any of it because I don't care. I'm here for the sport.
Right.
And I think that's probably one of my problems with horse racing, John,
it's over so quickly. Right.
Yeah. You've got to do all of this buildup to get yourself excited, and then it's just over.
Right.
But at the end of the day, they're horses. Like, I know that there are people that really care. I know people that are very, very passionate about horses, but the horses are the ones doing all the work, and they're not personalities that I'm going to get to follow in the news.
Right.
I don't get it, man.
Well, Bobby Flay likes him.
He sure does. This was a weird choice of something to talk about at the 5 o'clock hour. I usually try to make the top of 5 o'clock hour meat and potatoes. And I guess in a way I did that because I brought you a story about Chef Bobby Flay. So,
well,
you're welcome.
You brought us a story about Chef Bobby Flay and horses, which immediately put those two together for me. What's Bobby Flay doing with horses now? Breeding them, especially. In a meat and potatoes segment here.
If there's one thing Bobby Flay could do, it's make a horse taste delicious.
I'm sure he could.
This is the Mid Most Sports Show on Mid Missouri ESPN 107.3. Quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Mid-Mo Sports Show in Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in on this Monday. I hope you had a fantastic Monday. If you got something on your mind you want to talk about, give me a call, 573-364-1045. That's 573-364-1045. During the 4 o'clock hour, I started talking about the NBA and the NBA Players Association trying to negotiate whether or not they can eliminate the one-and-done rule where high schoolers, and I'm oversimplifying here, but have to play a year of college basketball or sit out for a year, basically, until they can be a part of the NBA draft. And I don't want to rehash everything that I already talked about, but one of the interesting points that was made was that the G League, which is a development league owned by the NBA, is now offering to pay elite prospects $125,000 to come into the G League, which is essentially an NBA development program. And I don't know. I'm very intrigued by this.
So was the G League always an option? I mean, you could either play college or play internationally or play in the G League?
I couldn't tell you how long the G League has been around, but it's relatively new.
Okay.
And it was started, I think, to try to give these college students an option. But I have to tell you, what you found out was, what, $25,000
$26,000 was the average salary for a G League player.
I think $125,000 is going to get people's attention, where I could absolutely see how $25,000 does not. But
and, you know, even that's higher. Remember, we did a story a long time ago on Major League Baseball players, minor league players.
Oh,
they
it's
make
woeful,
like
right?
$15,000 or $16,000.
And those guys all have extra jobs,
right,
too. But listen, times are changing even more than what we've already talked about. Because top high school to pro prospect Darius Bazley just signed an endorsement deal with New Balance worth $14 million and a guaranteed $1 million. And he is going to sit out this next year completely and train to prepare for the NBA draft.
Wow.
That, my friends, is some serious money. Because that's the part in this that sometimes gets lost, right? It's a player's ability to make money for themselves outside of just literally using their talent on the court. Because that's one of the things you can't do when you enter into the NCAA's jail system. You can't make money off of your likeness. You can't sign autographs and get paid. You can't be in television commercials and get paid. Because the NCAA owns you. You're theirs. You are so limited in what you can do. That's part of what got me down this path of despising the NCAA in the first place. It is so utterly and completely ridiculous to me that an athlete who has the ability to go out and get paid by a company to use him for marketing purposes isn't allowed to do that. That you can't sign autographs, your own autograph, and get paid for it. It's crazy. And I also said this earlier in the show. What are you going to see now? It everything trickles down, right? So you see all of these professional athletes. I mean, it is going crazy right now. With the holdouts and the unhappiness and the grass is greener syndrome, it's trickling down. It's trickling down. Look what just happened with Jontay Porter. Now, I know. That's not fair, Justin. Just because it happened with Mizzou doesn't mean that it would have happened with the G League. But Jontay Porter, who was primed to have a breakout season for the Mizzou Tigers basketball team, brother of Michael Porter Jr., who did nothing for our franchise other than get people excited about Mizzou basketball again. His brother, in what has to be considered devastating fashion, went down with a torn, I believe, ACL and MCL. I'm not positive on that, but he's out for the year. And now all that he can do is get ready for the NBA draft. And look, as a college basketball fan, as a Mizzou fan, of course, I wanted Jontay to decide to stay. And I think that there was real value in him doing that from a development standpoint, because he was trying to decide whether or not he was going to join his brother Michael Porter Jr. in the NBA draft. Now, of course, you know not Michael Porter Jr.'s story. He ended up falling pretty far in the first round. Denver Nuggets ended up taking him. I've not paid attention to see if he's even playing yet. But if you are a prized recruit and you look at the two Porter boys, in fact, the Porters have two sisters that were supposed to be playing college ball for Mizzou, and both of their seasons ended with torn, jacked up knees. I mean, it is terribly bad luck for that family. The family seems like tremendously stand-up people in the way that they've handled themselves with dignity and all this. But how can you not be understanding of a young man like Darius Bazley who wants to just sit out? He's saying, look, I already know for a fact that teams are interested in me. Now, to what degree, we'll see. Where would I be taken in the first round? I don't know. Would I even be taken in the first round? But I believe in myself. I'm betting on myself to be able to prove to these guys without a year of college basketball that I'm worth their investment. And I'm going to rest my body and I'm going to take care of my body. Because unlike a player like Le'Veon Bell, who had signed a contract, was a part of a franchise tag that he, if I'm understanding correctly, agreed to. These kids aren't tied into contracts. They aren't obligated to anything. They're free agents, man. They can go out and do whatever they want with their talent. And if this kid's got New Balance wanting to give him a guaranteed $1 million with the potential of it rising to $14 million, which I'm sure is contingent on some level of success in the NBA, go for it, baby. $1 million would change anybody's life. Even those people that go watch horse races.
Well, at least he could afford a good coach, couldn't he?
Got that right. Seriously. I mean, are you telling me, anyone listening right now, that $1 million, some $1 million payday with no risk to you, wouldn't change your life? Of course it would. Even in 2018 in America. I'm not going to be hard on these kids. If that's what you're looking for, you won't get it from me. I 100% support an individual's right and ability to go out and earn whatever they can for themselves and not to be limited by a fraud organization like the NCAA, who wants to hide under the idea of amateurism when they're paying coaches millions of dollars, when the programs are forking in tens of millions of dollars off of the free labor of these individuals who aren't permitted the ability to make any money off of the free service that they're providing. No, education doesn't count. It doesn't. That's not what many of those young men are there for. The ones that we're talking about, the ones that have a chance to go straight from high school to the NBA. That's not what those kids are going to college for. Don't kid yourselves. They're only doing it because they have to. It's a means to an end. That's what it is. But more opportunities are opening up. The climate is going to continue to change. My question is, can the NBA, who, in my opinion, on many issues, has been tip of the spear, they really do a great job of promoting themselves. Perfect example. This is something that is laughable to think the NFL would do. As protective of they are, as they are of their image and their material. The NBA is starting a thing where you can pay $1.99, I believe, to watch the fourth quarter, like starting in the fourth quarter of any NBA game. Because you hear it all the time with NBA fans. Like, well, I mean, NBA is great and all, but all I really care about is the last couple minutes of the game. That's what's exciting. You can literally spend $1.99 right now and watch the end of any game. Pick it up in the fourth quarter. Pick it up with 2 minutes to go. Whatever you want. Whatever suits your fancy. $1.99. That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. They are going to make an absurd amount of money off of that.
Horse racing fans will like it.
Think about it, though, John. In a day and age where we want the entertainment and we want it now, what better way to get instant gratification than the fourth quarter of NBA games for $2? And you could cherry pick the games that you want. In fact, you can, before you even know if it's money worth spending, you'll go on ESPN and you'll see what the score is. You'll be like, oh man, this is a close game and I love this team we're playing against. Let's turn it on. $2. Who cares? People waste more than that for a cup of coffee daily. You think people won't do that to watch the end of an NBA game? You bet your butt they will. Brilliant. So that's what I'm talking about. Generally, the NBA is very tip of the spear. And I want to see how they can resolve this issue, this one-and-done issue, because clearly they want it resolved or they wouldn't be offering $125,000 to players to entice them away from the NCAA. The NBA is not interested in a partnership with the NCAA. Actions speak louder than words, and their actions are speaking very loudly to me right now.
Now, I wonder how the kids making $26,000 a year are going to feel about the kids coming in at $135,000.
It's a fair question, and it won't be everyone, I should point out. I mean, it said elite prospects. So
right.
I am sure, I guess I'm reading between the lines a little bit, but my guess would be maybe there's a pay scale of some sort. If you come and play for us, you're worth
right.
$50,000. If
right.
you come play for us, you're worth $25,000. You, who... You know, you're a bright star who we know is going to get drafted next year. You're worth a lot because you're going to bring extra attention to this league, which is what they want ultimately. That's what's motivating them to do this, right? Let's turn another league, an offshoot league of the NBA, into something that's profitable and that people want to watch. Sometimes you got to spend money to make money, and they see that. So, all right, let's take a commercial break. This is Minmo Sports Show on Min Missouri ESPN 107.3. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Minmo Sports Show on Min Missouri ESPN 107.3. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're having a fantastic Monday. We have really covered the world of sports today in a way that you probably weren't expecting, but I mean, that's the goal, right? Keep you on your toes a little bit.
That's right.
Listen, I haven't spent a single moment of time on this show talking about the fight that took place between the Rockets and the Lakers this past weekend, because that's all you heard about all day today. So I waited until the end of the show, the last possible minute, to talk to you about Spitgate. This is the world of
Spitgate. I love it.
This is the world of absurdity that we have crossed over into as sports media. So for those of you that don't know, the Rockets are playing the Lakers this weekend. Chris Paul, Rajon Rondo get into a bit of a fracas, if you will. Punches are thrown. People lose their minds. And what comes out of this post-game is Chris Paul says he became incensed because Rajon Rondo spit on him. Now, let's be clear. There are very few more demeaning things you can do to someone than to spit on them. It is disgusting. And childish? Is that fair? But come on, people. Here's where I want to go with this. First of all, the amount of video analyzation that went into proving that Rajon Rondo did, in fact, spit on him, and I think what I saw did prove it, is ridiculous. Who freaking cares? What's funny is the punishment was already doled out by the league, and on social media, everybody was breaking it down frame by frame, whether or not it was spit. I mean, is this what we have come to as a sports world? We don't have enough entertainment, so we have to break down the spittle coming out of another person's mouth?
So just out of curiosity, what was the punishment?
Four games, three games, and two games were the three guys that got suspended.
Okay.
Come on. Like, who cares, guys? Here's really where I want to go with this, though. The broader issue of fighting in sports. When was the last time in any sport, except hockey, because hockey's a bit different, but take the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball. When was the last time that a fight broke out that someone got legitimately hurt? Like, hurt to the point where it created a problem for them, where they missed substantial time, where it negatively impacted the other team, where a punch thrown caused enough damage to really put somebody down. Now, we all watch television. My wife and I are watching this show, The Blacklist, right now, which NBC produces. And I want to start off by saying I really enjoyed the show. The show is starting to lose my interest because it's a 22-episode show. And like most 22-episode shows, there's too much nonsense in them. I like a tight, succinct story. I digress. Why did I bring that up? I said, we're watching The Blacklist. Oh, no, I've completely lost my point.
It has something to do with fighting?
Oh, John.
When was the last time you saw somebody get punched
and
substantially get hurt?
Yes, right. And so, listen, I don't know why I brought The Blacklist. I had a really good reason, but I'm not going to get back to it. But listen, it doesn't happen, right? Like, we just turn these absolute nothings into these tremendous issues. Look, I think a fracas on the field or on the court makes for great entertainment. Oh, that's where I was going to go with The Blacklist. On this show all the time, dudes get knocked out with one punch. One punch, boom, done. That doesn't happen often in real life. Now, there are exceptions. I was watching today. I spent a lot of time on social media, apparently. It was a Houston Texans. Was it Texans and Jaguars, maybe? I'm not exactly sure. I think that's who it was. But a Texans fan got knocked out from behind, one punch by a dude, fell face first onto the concrete steps. So, yeah, it can happen. But most of the time, these guys are throwing haymakers. They're not connecting solid. Now, does that mean that we can encourage it? Like, hey, guys, go do what they do in hockey and throw it out. No, you can't do that either. And I get that. And I understand your league has an image, and there's plenty of fuddy-duddies out there who'll be like, oh, it's just a bunch of criminals and thugs out there playing. And those are the same fans that'll watch a guy charge a mound in baseball and be fine with it. Like, there's all kinds of hypocrisy out there. But look, at the end of the day, I don't care. I don't care that there was a giant fight. When I found out there was, I laughed. I think it's fantastic. And sports, people are dialed up 1,000%, man. Emotions are running high, right? Sports, it's competition at its highest level. Everybody wants to win. I don't like a world where everybody's hugs and handshakes after the game and everybody's best friend in the offseason and rivalries aren't bitter anymore. I want to go back to the days of angry athletes that don't like each other and are arch enemies. Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas hated each other's guts, and that was awesome. It was awesome. I know I'm supposed to sit here and tell you all that we're supposed to be more like Jesus, and while that is true, it doesn't make for good sports television, I can tell you that. So selfishly, as a sports fan, if it gets chippy, if it gets nasty and ugly, I love it.
So should we just make it like the, you know, wrestlers and just talk trash about everybody all the time?
Why not?
Okay.
Look what happened. You remember the Conor McGregor thing we had a couple weeks ago?
Right.
That was awesome and absolutely insane. Dude won the fight, jumped out of the ring, and beat down a guy's trainer that had been talking too much crap to him leading up to the fight. That's amazing. It's so bananas, bonkers, crazy out there. And you've got the UFC who's got to get out there and go, oh, we're so appalled by this. But you know really what they were saying? That was amazing! Because people are still talking. I'm talking about it 2 weeks later on the radio. That's great. That's just what they want. And you know the NBA wanted that too. But my thing is, don't be outraged by it. Don't be brutally offended that he decided to spit on him. I'm a big soccer fan. A guy I used to root for, Luis Suarez, on two different occasions, once during the World Cup, bit a dude's ear. He bit him. And you got to see Luis Suarez. Go Google him right now. He's got some monster chompers, man. He's like a freaking field rabbit with those big old front teeth.
How does a soccer player get close enough to another guy to bite his ear?
It was weird. One of the times, it was like he was trying to nuzzle with him. The next thing you know, he's trying to take a bite out of crime like McGruff. I mean, it was crazy.
Wow.
But don't be offended. Don't be upset. Have fun with it. Enjoy it. Bask in the glow of it. That doesn't mean you're encouraging your children to behave this way on the football field. But these are grown men behaving like children. And in my world, anytime grown men behave like children, that's great theater. That's great entertainment. Give me some more of it. Don't be mad. Just soak it up, baby. This is the Menlo Sports Show on Mid Missouri ESPN 107.3. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but you know what's coming up. When we come back, we got a hot sauce, weak sauce. You don't want to miss it.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Welcome back to the Menlo Sports Show on Mid Missouri ESPN 107.3. It won't surprise you to know that that particular song, it's not something I generally jam out to.
Really?
No, it's a lot better than that other one, though, that we're going to get rid of. You're going to get rid of that.
I am going to do that. The Childish Gambino.
That was awful. Just awful.
You got it.
But you know it's not awful, John?
Right.
This show, because it's time for some hot sauce, weak sauce.
Hot sauce. Hot sauce. Hot sauce.
It's time for hot sauce.
That's weak sauce, Dan.
So weak sauce. It's time for some hot sauce, weak sauce.
Do not enter that sauce in the county fair because it is weak.
Weak sauce.
Let's get this party started with a weak sauce.
You play ball like a girl!
Odell Beckham Jr. does not come across as a smart man in general. I could be wrong on that, but I have some evidence for you on this particular issue. Because Odell Beckham Jr. has been dealing with cramps. And not the kind that you would associate with female issues. And not cramps from eating bad Italian food, but the kind of cramps that you get when your body is dehydrated. When asked his take on this particular issue, this is what he had to say.
I've always cramped. It's just I feel like I'm working harder than I ever have. So I really don't like water. I'm trying. I really just don't like it. You know, when you get that stomach feeling, it's all slushy. Like I'm trying to stay hydrated, but... you know, sometimes I just gotta get an IV. It's just necessary. You know, you're cramping in both calves. It's hard to run and make cuts. And if you're cramping and dehydrated, you're susceptible to something else. So I'm trying to stay on top of it the best that I can.
No. You're not, because you stay on top of it by drinking. The slushy feeling you get in your stomach. What is he even talking about?
I'm drinking too much.
You got to drink something.
You got to sip. Often. I'll tell you, you know I'm a bicyclist.
You are. Which requires a lot of hydration.
Can you imagine if a bicyclist stopped and went and got an IV and came back?
You think
there might be something to say about that?
John, he literally gets IVs on the sideline.
I can't believe it.
Explain to me how having a needle injected into your body and fluid inserted that way is easier than taking a freaking drink of water.
Right. If you don't like water, you get Gatorade.
Absolutely, and they've got plenty of it on the sidelines.
Right.
It makes no sense to me. I mean, there is no other explanation for this other than he's a complete moron. I guarantee you he thinks the earth is flat. I guarantee it. There's no doubt in my mind he and Kyrie Irving are hanging out together talking about our flat earth.
Man.
All right, let's go with a crazy sauce.
The flag was still there.
All right, here's why this is a crazy sauce. I'm a stat guy. I love interesting stats. And as tweeted out by @DCSportsBOG, which is Dan Steinberg, apparently. Long way to go to get there. Listen to this. Just listen, okay? The Redskins are 1-1. One win and one loss in their last two games. 2-2 in their last four games. They're 3-3 in their last six games. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. They're 6-6 in their last 12 games. They're 7-7 in their last 14 games. I'm not done yet.
How is this possible?
They're 10-10 in their last 20 games. They're 16-16-1 in their last 33 games. They're 18-18-1 in their last 37 games. And they are 28-28-1 in their last 57 games.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
You can't
That blows me away.
You can't make this stuff up. That is neither a hot sauce nor a weak sauce. It is actually the textbook definition of mediocre sauce, because they are absolutely 100% even in wins and losses. Absolutely bananas. Let's go with a weak sauce.
You're killing me, Smalls.
You're not going to believe how Western Kentucky lost a football game against Old Dominion. Western Kentucky was ahead. They took the lead 34-27 with a minute 37 left in the fourth quarter. Okay, this was against Old Dominion. These are not good football teams, but this is interesting. But the Monarchs of Old Dominion were not willing to concede. Someone named Blake LaRussa engineered an 8-play, 79-yard drive that ended with a touchdown pass to Travis Fulgham. Western Kentucky wanted to use the 9 remaining seconds following the touchdown to try to attempt a game-winning field goal after a series of penalties and one passing play moved them down the field in a, you know, no time at all. So, game-winning field goal, it was, I think, like a 50-yarder maybe, and this kid's career long was 50 yards. And he kicked it and missed it, okay? It might have even been shorter than that. It definitely wasn't longer than that. But they were saved. Western Kentucky was saved because a foul was committed, a 5-yard penalty. Was like defensive offsides or something. And they got a chance, and they chose to re-kick it. Now, remember, John, this is college football. So they could have chosen to just go into overtime. Take a knee. Don't give the other team any chance at good field position. But no, they kick another field goal. They miss it. It comes up short. But it's one of those rare instances where if a kick comes up short but is still in the field of play, the other team can field it and run it back for a score. Now, understand, there's no time left on the clock when the ball is in the air. The guy catches it, runs it way down the field, gets it to like the 15-yard line. But he's pushed out of bounds. And so the game should be over, and it should go into overtime. But no! Western Kentucky wasn't content screwing up 2 straight kicks. Someone committed a face mask penalty, and a game cannot end on a defensive penalty. So they get the ball after 15 more yards and kick a 26-yard field goal to win the game, improbably scoring 10 points in a situation where they shouldn't have even been tied in the first place. Absolutely unbelievable.
And so the kicker got to be the hero. Maybe.
The kick returner will get the – well, you got a goat on one side.
Right.
And then a hero on the other. All right, let's go with the hot sauce.
Derek Johnson, the all-time leading tackler in the history of the Chiefs, with a touchdown for Kansas City.
You're a big NPR guy, John, so maybe you've heard this story already, but I stumbled across it this week and saved it. An Arizona man who's 62 years young fell into a mine shaft, which that would just be awful, broke many bones in his body, killed 3 rattlesnakes while trapped in the mine shaft, survived for days, and was eventually rescued.
Wow.
This was a 100-foot deep mine shaft.
He fell down 100 feet?
Yes.
How did that happen, and how did he survive?
All I can tell you is that guy's more man than I am.
Boy, no kidding.
Can you imagine being in a, I'm assuming it's mostly pitch black, right?
Right.
Mine shaft 100 feet down and staving off
rattlesnakes,
3 different rattlesnakes.
Yeah, with no light.
And what weapons would he even have? I don't know.
Rocks. Wow.
Survived for days. He broke both of his legs. He said he lay helpless with several rattlesnakes slithering around him. Unbelievable. It took 6 hours just to pull him out of the mine shaft.
Wow.
That's hot sauce, man. All right, let's go with the weak sauce.
There's no crying in baseball.
We'll go from one non-sports story to another. Police in Davis, California are investigating an incident in high school in which a student allegedly baked cookies that no less than 9 people ate with a very disturbing secret ingredient, John. He supposedly put the ashes of his cremated grandparents into the delightful sugar cookies as kids feasted on them.
Is this for real?
Yes! You can't make this stuff up. If I had made that up, I would deserve a pay raise. That would be impressive.
Man.
People are messed up, dude.
No kidding.
Let's go with the weak sauce.
There's no crying in baseball!
I just did that one, sorry.
That's all right. The Texans, concerned about the effect air pressure could have on Deshaun Watson's bruised lung and injured ribs. Like, they were afraid he could die taking him up in the air with his bruised lungs because of the air pressure. Sent Deshaun Watson to Jacksonville via a bus. He took his own personal 12-hour bus ride instead of taking the flight with the team. Deshaun Watson played as the starting quarterback in that game. Can I make a suggestion, John? In a day and age where quarterbacks are everything, and we've got to protect quarterbacks, we've got to put diapers on quarterbacks to make sure that they're safe if they have an accident. Why are we playing Deshaun Watson in a game where his body is so physically broken right now that he can't ride in an airplane? Someone help me understand how that is in any way, shape, or form okay.
A pressurized airplane at that.
I got nothing on this. Absolutely nothing. So close out with the weak sauce.
Here on the field from up close, just watching Coach Vance Joseph from here. You watch him now on the screen.
I'm laughing because my wife had a lot of fun at Sergio's Dip's expense last week. It's just we just watched that whole clip. It's so bad, man. Jimmy Butler, this is what he had to say after being booed by home fans in Minnesota this week. I love it. I love it. I think people kind of love to hate me sometimes. You don't say. Say whatever you want to say, but it makes me smile what people think about me. But no matter what, you got to respect my effort. You may not like me. That's okay. But as long as you know my heart and mind are in the right place, that I do everything to win, and I would do anything for my guys. Your heart and mind are in the right place. You're trying to force your way out of the team via trade. You lambasted your teammates in practice on the first day of practice. You are selfish. You are a disappointing player who has accomplished very little in his career considering the volume of talent that he has. I don't have to respect you at all. In fact, I never will. There's nothing that you can do in your career that will change how I feel about you now, Jimmy Butler. You have ruined that for me and for many, many sports fans across this great land. That's how it works when you make bad choices. LeBron James made one grave mistake in his life. He did the decision on national TV, and what happened? He lost a massive fan base. Now he's still got plenty of fans and he sleeps well at night, but don't tell me that I have to respect you. I ain't buying what you're selling, bro. This is the Minmo Sports Show on Mid-Missouri ESPN 107.3. He's John Francis. I'm Justin Renaud. Thank you for tuning in. We've got the Chiefs game this Sunday at noon. He's gone and I'm gone. Until next week, I'm out.
The Mid-Mo Sports Show, a presentation of Mid-Missouri Media. Heard Mondays from 4 to 6 on ESPN 107.3.